Welcome to Locked On NBA. On today's show, the Warriors, are they relying too much on Steph Curry? And will Draymond Green show up for Game 4? We ask and answer the biggest questions of these finals that look to be trending in Boston's direction. All of that and more coming up next.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily podcast on the NBA, however you may be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with Adam Matas. We'll get to how the Warriors can get more from Draymond Green and the most important trends of the finals so far. But we have to begin with Steph Curry, who injured his ankle in a scrum late in Game 3, and it didn't look good, grimacing in pain, clearly frustrated by the injury. According to reports, he was limping out of the arena late that night, and his health for the rest of the series is immediately called into question. But when speaking with reporters on Thursday, Steph said, quote, "I'm going to play. That's all I know right now," end quote. But Adam, as we get to the biggest questions of these finals, the biggest of the biggest questions has got to be, what version of Steph are we going to see going forward? What do you think?
I mean, I have no idea with that. You're right that with Steph, we know, obviously, ankles are incredibly important. They're also incredibly vulnerable to him. I think this is now the second time in his playoffs that he's sort of had a minor tweak. Obviously, we're able to play through the previous one. I don't know. What I do know is that I think the margins in the series are incredibly small for Golden State. I think they're likely small for both teams. Like, this is a very good – I think this is a – great example of where I think the two best teams are the two teams matched up in the finals. We don't get that every year. These teams are. I think that when you talk about so far in this series, Golden State has had maybe fewer things that could go wrong. They have some vulnerabilities that Boston has been able to find. I think that Boston has some vulnerabilities that Golden State has been able to find. But when you look at this, you think there's really no margin for error on the big stuff that you consider to be that's your bread and butter. And Steph Curry is, of course, the ultimate bread and butter for the Golden State Warriors. So if he is anything less than 100%, I think you have to worry about Golden State's chances in the series.
Yeah, and you mentioned the bread and butter there. A big part of it has been the Steph Curry pick and roll, which they're running at a little bit more of a frequency. It's about 30 per game. And if he's hobbled even a little bit here and he doesn't have that same first step, that same punch when he's getting into the middle of the floor, because of this ankle, that's a big problem, right? Like, all of a sudden, he's not getting as deep in penetration. He's not able to spray to shooters the way that he has been. And I don't think he's been running, like, James Harden-level pick and roll, like, circa 2018 Houston Rockets. But it's been ramped up a little bit.
More than their regular season, for sure. Definitely more than their identity warrants. And I think that's a little bit natural with how the NBA has evolved. And when you get into the playoffs, it just inevitably, you almost get forced into it.
Yeah.
Just by the way teams kind of figure you out and funnel to you. By the way, Wes, this is an aside, but I do wonder, the NBA is at a point right now where I really do feel like we are solving the rules and solving the trends. And I do wonder about this, where even the teams that have been able to break the spread pick and roll, which is the NBA for a while there, it felt, is everybody just going to do this? I do wonder if sometimes even teams that have built an identity outside of that have gotten funneled towards that, because the league and how it is set up right now is almost only rewards that. But that's a story for a different day. Maybe something we'll get to over the summer. But yes, like,
well, I actually think the Celtics have sort of, They've done some of the isolation stuff with Tatum and Jaylen Brown, but it hasn't been just like completely north and south. I kind of like what they've done as an aside. It doesn't feel like they've done completely spread pick and roll, but go ahead.
They're such an interesting team. I mean, there's a lot to get to there in terms of just the trends of the Celtics. Like, I think their top end talent, as great as it is maybe slightly less good of what we've seen from recent champions. Like, usually the best, one of the, like, a top seven player, top six player in the league is usually on the championship team. And I don't think you have that. You have some very, very, very good young players, but they're just so deep and so even and so many different ways they can attack you. But no, with the Warriors, it just starts with Steph Curry. And I think one of the things, I know we'll get to this in a minute. In fact, it's number two. Maybe we could kind of combine these. But what's the big adjustment that I think Boston is making right now, they made a couple of great ones, but one of the big ones is that they are treating Draymond Green as if he was Andre Roberson, as if he was Matisse Thybul, as if they could dare him to score 20 points. Yeah. And right now you look at it and you think, I don't think he can. That'll be one of the big stories. But if you take that and you take that it might be a little bit easier just to keep Steph out of the paint if he's a little bit hobbled, that just handicaps you on offense so much.
Yeah, Draymond, 15 points through three games in this series.
Wild.
And Steve Kerr always will say this about Draymond. We don't need him to score. He does so much of everything else. He says that publicly. But they need him to score. Yeah. And they know that internally. Like, they have had conversations where they have, like, at the end of last season, they told Draymond that they needed him to be more of a factor on offense. And you kind of got that sense earlier this season that he started to try to trend that direction. But, you know, Draymond just went back to his old ways. And he was just, you know what? He's not even going to look at the basket. The Celtics at this point know that. And they're just flatly ignoring him. Like, even if you look at the matchup data that they have on NBA.com, like, it doesn't even feel like it's accurate, because it's just like the closest defender. And most of the time it's like somebody 10 feet away from him. They're completely ignoring him. They're daring him to shoot. He doesn't want to do it. He's very, very far from like triple double in game seven level Draymond Green. Like, he has clearly lost a step. He can't get to the basket the same way. He can't get at the basket as far as his leaping ability the same way. Yeah, exactly. He's not the same finisher. And he was never a great athlete to begin with. So even like a marginal drop off is pretty much sucked his entire offensive game away. The answer to your question is, like, can he score 20 points? I'm like, is he going to score 20 points in four games? Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I think the bigger piece here is, you know, what do you need from Draymond to win the series? And it's not just, because if you told me, can he hit like two or three timely threes in a game? Like, I wouldn't count on it, but he could certainly do it.
Sure.
But I kind of feel like they need him to score, and I don't think they need three-pointers. Like, those are just whatever, dumb luck almost. But they need him to be able to put pressure on the paint so that he has to be guarded and you have to rotate, and then you can kind of get that ball popping. And right now, you know, a couple things are happening with Boston that I think are so interesting. One of them is they're going bigger. You know, they're kind of like countering instead of the small ball, like, oh my God, they're going to be too fast. First of all, they have some smart, incredibly smart players. Even Robert Williams has come a long way. Al Horford, Grant Williams. They've just got the ability to kind of play big in terms of like girthy and long and the ability to kind of protect the rim. So that not only does Draymond have to like roll to the rim and be confident and go up and finish, but he's got to finish against two or three guys who are really, really good at sort of waiting to the last minute, rotating over, and then blocking his shot anyway. Basically saying, we're not going to let you fake go to the rim and then kick out. We're going to make you actually have to go up, and then we're going to challenge you because we're so much more athletic, and they just have the timing down. So the thing is that Draymond, I think, has to finish at the rim and finish from the floater zone, and he has to do it against a team that is so perfectly designed to make that difficult on him.
Well, they're very happy, the Celtics are, to just put Marcus Smart on Draymond Green. And Draymond Green's a big, and he's not a traditional big, but he's still technically a big. And you would like to see somebody with that kind of quote-unquote mismatch take him to the post and do something. At least he doesn't have to get into his Hakeem Olajuwon, try to post him up kind of thing, but shoot over him. You know, you could start there, just face up and shoot over him with the floaters like you were talking about. But it's not even a factor. And when you're able to slot Marcus Smart onto Draymond and have zero qualms about it whatsoever, and actually feel really good about that matchup. And then when the Celtics get into, or when the Warriors get into their, you know, patented Steph and Draymond pick and roll, and then you can just have Marcus Smart fighting over that screen, chasing Steph Curry down the way he does so well, it's a really advantageous thing for them. And the Warriors kind of need, they've always, when it comes down to it, fallen back on what? The Steph and Draymond pick and roll.
Right.
And when they have somebody like Marcus Smart, who's able to so comfortably guard Draymond Green, and they can't punish that mismatch and get Marcus Smart off of Draymond, that's a real problem. That's a real problem for them.
And Marcus Smart, it's almost ironic in some ways, because Draymond, if we look at the broader evolution of the NBA over the last, you know, 8 years, Draymond has been that undersized guy with a great wingspan, but undersized guy who gets away with murder against bigger bigs, right? Because inside the paint, you're allowed to get really physical, especially if you're the smaller guy. Well, it's kind of funny that his kryptonite in the series is almost a guy who's even smaller. I mean, like, Marcus Smart is basically a Draymond Green at the guard spot. He just gets really physical. He gets really low. And then if you do try to overpower him, if you say like, okay, I'm going to fight fire with fire, I'm going to fight physicality with physicality, there's nobody better in the league at taking a dive than Marcus Smart. So you're in this constant battle of, how do I not let him use his smallness and use the size against me? But if I push back, he's going to flop on me. And it brings me to what I'm talking about here. And this is kind of I think I brought this up on the show again, but when I talk about even teams that are predicated on ball movement getting funneled into pick and roll, one of the reasons for this is you watch a battle between, say, a Marcus Smart and a Draymond inside, or a Grant Williams and, you know, whoever it is, the big guys in the series inside, you think, my God, that's football, that's rugby. You go outside and you breathe on a guy. The play that was hilarious to me was the 7-point possession in this game, which part of me wonders, if you look at this game, wasn't that close. Boston won pretty comfortably, right, and there was this random 7-point possession in there that might have artificially made it feel even closer than
a 9-point lead went to 2 after one possession. Yeah,
and if it was always 9, then they probably end up winning by 20 instead of 15, right, or whatever it was. But that play, you know, Al Horford did foul him and he did jump into the landing zone in what I believe was an earnest attempt at trying to block a shot of the greatest 3-point shooter alive. I don't think this was one of those Zaza Pachulia, let's stick my leg out underneath the guy, or just kind of make, even if it wasn't intentional, it was reckless. This to me wasn't even reckless. It was, how does a guy, Al Horford, who's maybe the best center in the league in terms of being able to guard inside, outside, rotate, all this, even he can't do this without, you know, putting himself at danger of giving up a 4-point play. It's just, it actually wasn't a 4-point, a 7-point play.
Right.
To me, I look at this and I think it's insane how impossible it is for a big to guard on the perimeter and how not impossible it is for a little guy to guard inside.
Yeah. And look, we've talked about the two main Warriors players here, Steph and Draymond Green. Obviously, they are clearly very important to the Warriors' potential success in this series, but they got other players who got to step up. We're going to talk about that. We're going to speculate who are the best 5 Warriors right now in this series for them. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all of your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, news, and odds, including this year's basketball championship matchup, the NHL Hockey Conference Finals, Major League Baseball, and of course, all the latest fighting news from MMA and UFC to boxing. Bet Online is your continued source for all of your sport wagering information, including live betting, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and actions. Bet Online, where the game starts. The ultimate NBA mock draft starts June 16th with over 50 insiders. Nothing equals the ultimate NBA mock draft. The Locked On NBA Big Board Draft Experts plus the Odyssey Insiders first pick is June 16th. Search ultimate NBA mock draft and follow now so you don't miss a pick. Adam, we're going through our biggest questions of the finals so far. The next one is one that I think the Warriors have struggled with all series and kind of a little bit all season. Who are their best 5 players? Because Steve Kerr said after game 3 that he was just looking to plug holes the entire game. And it felt like it. It really did. And against a team like the Celtics, who pretty much know who their top 7 are, and they know exactly what their rotations are going to be, they're so secure in their identity. There was a key stretch in that fourth quarter where they were starting to pull away, and Ime Udoka could have went in so many different directions, maybe go small. Al Horford at the 5 was working really well for the most part, spread him out with shooting. All that was working, but he decided to go back to his double big starting lineup, and it worked. You know, it worked. They just kept extending the lead from there. And meanwhile, the Warriors are like, okay, do we want to go small with Jordan Poole and Gary Payton and Steph Curry and all these guys? Do we want to try to go big and match up with the rebounding and the length with the Celtics, or at least try to? And it just felt like they were, like Steve Kerr said, plugging holes that ultimately did not work. I don't know who the Warriors' best 5 players are, and I'm not even sure if I know who their best 4 players are. Like, I know that pretty much Steph and Wiggins are going to be on the court no matter what in their best 5 lineups. You assume that Klay and Draymond are going to be in that lineup too, so you could start with those 4, but I'm up for anything at this point.
I think there's a couple things at play here. When you say the best, like the Celtics know who their best guys are, I almost disagree with you, not in that they don't know who they are. They're not compromised the way that the Golden State was compromised in game 3 with Draymond not scoring and the ability to kind of change this. We'll see if the Golden State Warriors adjust maybe and make a plan, but to me, if you ask like who have been the best Celtics, Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, probably like that would probably be my list. So and like Jason Tatum is their best player, but I'm just saying in this series, I think he is almost a lot of this out of necessity because of what the matchups have dictate and how Golden State has emphasized their defense. It's almost forced the ball into some other guys' hands. So they are even using a different, better, you know, I'm using air quotes here, better right now than what they would typically use. But if you go to the other side, here's what's so fascinating about it. I actually feel like I do know what the best lineup is here. And Klay Thompson, all respect to him, I don't think he has, if you asked me, if you just needed just the offensive portion of this, Jordan Poole or Klay Thompson, who's going to give it to you? I think Jordan Poole might actually give you the better chance here. And I know Klay Thompson has made some shots here, but when you look at just some of the loss in mobility, the up and down shooting, kind of the streaky shooting, the Warriors won't do this. I think Klay's their guy. They've won championships with him. Until they don't, they're going to continue to ride their guys, and I respect and understand it. But to me, if you ask me, I think you can go with Steph Curry. I think you can go with Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, because I think you have to have him out there too. I know some people have talked about maybe bringing him off. I don't think you can do that. But to me, I think Gary Payton is an important piece here, in large part because he allows you to guard Jason Tatum correctly. Like, you don't have to compromise and bend your defense. Now you can kind of put him there and in some ways hope to cancel out the other team's best punch. The problem is Gary Payton's not a threat. Draymond Green's not a threat. And I don't think you can have two zeros. You either have to get some points out of Gary Payton that you don't expect, or you got to get points out of Draymond Green that you don't expect. And therein lies the problem. So for me, that is the solve, I think, for the Golden State Warriors. I just don't know that they're going to be able to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Kerr was talking about trying to find that two-way balance between, okay, there's enough defense here, but maybe not enough offense. And it's sort of the same reason, like the Gary Payton and Draymond thing that you were talking about, the issue there of having two zeros. Same reason why he kind of leaned away from Kevon Looney in that fourth quarter, or in that game, really. He only played, what, 17 minutes? Because now you have two zeros on offense. You know, maybe if Draymond Green fouls out, then you could put one of them on the court.
But let me make one other little side point here, though, because the thing about Draymond Green that's so interesting to me is, he actually, I think, could score better, but he's being asked to do so much. Obviously, defensively, he's always been asked to do just so. He puts so much more, as much energy as any forward or center does in the NBA. He puts that much energy on that end, which, whatever, that's his job. Offensively, I still think he could give you 12, 13, 14, 15 points. But when you go big and all of a sudden, not only do you have to guard, but you also have to rebound now against a guy who's got you by 3 inches and, oh, by the way, 40, 50 pounds. And how many times did Robert Williams just reach over the top of him? How many times was Draymond Green boxing out for 6-7 seconds, doesn't get the rebound, and now you're on defense again? I think Draymond is worn down by his defensive responsibilities, and then the death knell has been the size disadvantage that now when it's time to go finish over those guys, he doesn't have it.
We started the playoffs going one-on-one with Nikola Jokic, and he looked great doing it. I mean, the Warriors dominated that series, but it's been a long playoffs, and maybe there is something to what you're saying where you have to do this every single series. Memphis is another big team. You know, they kept going against those kinds of teams up until really Dallas, and there might be something to that. But I also don't think, I'm a big Kevon Looney fan. I love what he brings to the table, but he's not enough to match up with three bigs the way that Boston has. And I do kind of still feel like the way for the Warriors to win this is to try to go small and win that way. Cause I just don't, I don't know that that's going to be enough, but I feel more confident in that route than the trying to match up route. And so I don't mind when Steve goes that way. That said, like, the starting lineup of Steph, Klay, Wiggins, Draymond, and Kevon Looney is plus 11 in 36 minutes this series. So they've actually been good. And I have kind of liked that other lineup where they go with Steph, Klay, Wiggins, Otto Porter, and Draymond Green. Those lineups, that's plus 8 in just 13 minutes. We saw most of that, I think, in game 3. But that gives you enough of that, like, medium kind of size between Porter and Wiggins and Klay and Draymond. Obviously Steph's in there because you have to have him in there. And it gives you enough length. Wiggins is a really good rebounder. Otto Porter can sometimes be, Draymond Green can sometimes be, but if you could spread them out with shooters, if Wiggins and Porter can get hot from 3-point range, and obviously you got the threat of Steph and Klay always, then I kind of like that. That might be the best kind of 5-man unit. I almost want to rephrase the question, not from like who are the Warriors' best 5 players, but like what are the go-to units? Like what are your go-to 5-man lineups and rotations? And Boston knows exactly what it is that they want to do with their rotation and what lineups they want to get into, where Golden State is still just looking for answers. Like even the Gary Payton thing, like he's a zero on offense.
Right.
It doesn't really feel like even Jason Tatum was scared to shoot over him. Yeah.
Didn't he hit 2 3-pointers in game 2 again? Like unexpected. Yeah. You don't count on that. But when he does, it makes quite a big difference. So that's the thing with him is I do think that he is the right defensive option. And I actually do think he makes a pretty big difference on Jason Tatum. Like even if Jason Tatum's going to score on him, it allows you to guard him one-on-one and just not overhelp. But you're right. Like you can't have two, you can have 1-0 on offense. You really can, but you can't have two of them. And unfortunately he gives you 2 zeros.
Let's get to our next question really quick. this one's easy. Can Robert Williams III stay healthy? Because if he can, he's been really, really good. But that knee has been bothering him all season, especially in the playoffs. We saw it bothering him quite a bit in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Heat. But he's been absolutely dominant. And in game three, he looked real right, right? He's got now 10 blocks in three games. I haven't seen that talked about all that much.
Really?
Is that like out there a lot?
Maybe I think it's out there. I mean, what did he have, like five in the six in this last one? I mean, he was making
maybe some I just don't follow blocks. Celtics people on purpose, but
that's a smart move.
10 blocks in three games is a lot. The Warriors are shooting 38.5% on shots defended by Robert Williams III, which is not good for the Warriors.
I mean, he's such a success story for the Celtics when you just talk about draft development and buy-in and all of that. Like, he's exactly the piece they envisioned him to be. He's great. When you asked about the injury thing, I'm inclined to go off of our most recent data, and he looked like fine. Like, even though the minutes or whatever. And here's the nice thing about him is it's not like Steph, where you can't say, well, we're only going to get 22 minutes out of Steph tonight. You know, whatever. Let's maximize those minutes. You just can't do that. You need the full 35, 36, 40 minutes, whatever it's going to take. I think with Robert Williams, because you have Grant Williams, because you have Al Horford, I just think you can't afford, like, hey, we don't have him for – we would love to play him for 30 tonight. Maybe you wouldn't, by the way. You're getting a lot of great stuff out of Al Horford. But we want to play him 30 tonight, but whatever. We only get 20. No problem.
And he's in the Warriors' head for those 20 minutes. Whatever he's giving you, he's really in their head. And again, we saw this in the Eastern Conference Finals with the Heat. When Robert Williams was right, they just were scared to get to the rim. And that's why Robert Williams was a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year when he was healthy during the regular season. He's just got that he's got that shot-blocking ability, but he's just got also a presence in the paint that he really makes it hard for everybody getting in there. And then the last thing here is just who wins the turnover battle. When it comes down to it, we can nitpick and dissect lineups and do all these things. But when it comes down to it, when the Celtics have won the turnover battle, they won the game. This series, all playoffs long, that's been the story. If they can keep the turnovers low, I just think that they're going to win this series. I think it's as simple as that.
You look at the half court data versus the like overall data, there's a huge drop off for the Warriors the more you force them to play in a half court. So some of this is, it's funny, the Celtics are a team that plays incredibly disciplined for large periods, but when they lose control of that discipline, when they go away for it, they go away for it really, really big time. Like they can
go
play
all 90. In.
Yeah, they go all in on being on losing focus. But this is the thing is, this is why I think the Celtics have a pretty strong edge in the series where we sit right now after three games, is because I feel like the Celtics don't need to be spectacular. They need to be disciplined and they need to sort of execute. Whereas I feel like the Warriors maybe need to be a little bit more spectacular. And in this instance, spectacular might mean Draymond Green making layups. But nonetheless, it's still Steph Curry making three. Like, you have to do the things that are like, wow, that broke you. Whereas I think the Celtics, like you said, they just need to not turn the ball over. They need to continue to hit the offensive glass. You know, the things that you can control, especially when you have that physical advantage.
They're the better team, you know? And this has sort of been the talking point. The Warriors are underdogs, right? They're the underdogs according to Las Vegas. They have the best player in the series, but I don't think that they're the most talented team. I think the Celtics are the better team. And usually
that's
what happens.
It's close enough. I'm not ready to go too far in that direction. It's close enough. I just am more worried. Here's the great thing about the Celtics. They are so malleable. They're so smart. They've got so many different ways to beat you. And right now, they're just a little bit of a whack-a-mole. We took out Tatum. We forced him into a bad game. Well, then all of a sudden Al Horford goes off and Marcus Smart goes off. And they just got so many. Derek White won him a game in the series already. I think that the Warriors are greater with their greatest punch. But right now the Celtics have kind of mitigated a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And now you're looking at guys that you're not confident are going to be able to come through for you.
Yeah, yeah. Look, it's still a series. I'm not counting the Warriors out. But if it keeps going in this direction, it looks pretty good for Boston, right? Yeah.
There you go.
Player podcasts. Who doesn't want to talk about that? LeBron James might be starting one. But first, let's hear from our sponsor, Sakara. Feeling your best starts with what you eat. Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. Sakara gives you the tools you need to transform your life with their organic, ready-to-eat meal delivery program and functional wellness essentials. Their nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunch, and dinners are made with powerful, plant-rich ingredients, helping boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. Plus, it's delivered right to your door, ready to eat. Saqqara's functional plant-rich wellness essentials help you create a body you love living in. From their best-selling metabolism super powder to the foundation, their daily supplemental packs, Saqqara's products are designed to support your wellness goals anytime, anywhere. And right now, Saqqara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to saqqara.com/lockedon20 or enter the code lockedon20 at checkout. Again, that's Saqqara, SAKARA.com/lockedon20 to get 20% off on your next order. Saqqara.com/lockedon20. All right, it's Friday, so that means we're counting down to the weekend. And today, we are ranking the best NBA player podcasters, current and former, which could soon include LeBron James, who says he wants to start a podcast. Adam, are you subscribing to LeBron's pod? And do you think he might be the best one? Where do you want to start with this?
It's going to be the most popular one if he does start a podcast, I imagine. But no, I will not be subscribing. I will not be rating and reviewing. I don't think I'll be the daily listener. I'm not too interested. I'm actually more ready for LeBron to retire and get out of the league. The league, I think, has been more interesting without him. Sorry, LeBron. Apologies, LeBron. But it is funny, man. What do you make of this whole, you know, Draymond Green has the new media thing, which I think can be a little corny, but there is also something to it. Like, players are clapping back at the guys who have had the mic. Like, there is this, everybody gets a chance now to grab the mic. And if you're interesting, if you have something good to say, you can build an audience. Well, players have a leg up on this and they're starting to realize it and clap back. What has been your takeaway of it?
I gotta be honest, the new media doesn't seem like that much different than the old media. if it's just guys argue on television about stuff, look, it's cool that players get to get another platform that's different than the post-game press conference, I guess, because I thought that's what that was for, but whatever. Now you get to go on First Take and argue directly with Stephen A.
Which or hop in Spaces. Andre Iguodala's just on Spaces after the game. Like
Twitter Spaces, Iguodala's got a new podcast. Like, there's a lot of player podcasts. They're all out there. They're all telling their versions of their stories, which is cool, right? Like, that's cool if you're really into that player. I just have a really hard time buying into these player podcasts if I don't, like, really care about that player first.
Right.
You know what I mean? And maybe I'm just not the audience, but I kind of feel like how many player podcasts are people actually subscribed to? Like, are you listening to like four different player podcasts? Like, I don't know.
There's a couple of different, I'm not four different ones, but there are like, you know, and we're going to go over the list. I'm going to power rank the ones that I find to be the most compelling. So there are some guys that I'm like, hey, I'm really interested. I will say a couple things. And we saw this with outlets like the Players Tribune, which had some incredible pieces where you think this is a great insight. I'm really learning something. But there is also something too where the biography is sometimes better than the autobiography. Like sometimes you're not the best storyteller about yourself, right? You can filter this through, and I think we get this. And one example, you know, I love Draymond Green. I'm everybody that kind of follows me closely knows I'm a huge fan of his in a lot of ways. But it is funny to me that he talks about the new media and we're not like berating players for this or that and being dishonest and twisting things. When he was asked after the game, right after, and look, tensions are high, and he was asked a question by a reporter about, hey, you're talking on your podcast to X's and O's. Do you feel like other teams or whatever are taking it? Now, is this question a great one? I don't think it was a great question, but I don't think it was an unfair one. And Draymond Green spent 60 seconds berating this poor guy for asking him about, oh, you don't know X's and O's. This is your basketball IQ. And I'm thinking, bro, media, like this is an earnest question from a media member that is asking that if you wanted to take the question seriously, you could have provided insight about, hey, look, X's and O's are actually way more complex than even what I talk about. And nothing I've said is anything that every coach in this league wouldn't already know. Like, I'm not giving away secrets. I'm going, even though I'm going deeper than maybe you would go, I'm going still going skin deep in the grand scheme of things. Like, that's a fair question. And I think it was asked as a, hey, this is the healthy relationship. Kind of explain that. Yeah. And it gives credence to. So to me, he talks about new media and taking things with more gravity. And then somebody asks that question and he berates him. I think, man, what is the difference? You just turned into the old media for that moment because you're a little mad about losing a game.
This is my, like, if the new media is a player's chance to just basically clap back at people who've been criticizing them on ESPN and whatever, I'm just not that interested in that. That to me is not interesting. And I think that there's parts of it that work. Like, for example, Tony Romo. like, you know, this with what he's doing on the NFL broadcast, I thought was actually pretty cool his first year because he played with so many of those guys. And I like when they do get these people in the booth for the NBA games who have played. I'm like, oh, you could give me like real insight into what this player is, because like if we want to go instead of new media, like old media, and then you got like these old heads criticizing the game this way, that to me isn't interesting in the broadcast. But if you can get a more modern player who could tell me a story, like Richard Jefferson, for example, J.J. Redick, like these guys who get on the broadcast and know the players who are on the court and can share some insights about the players on the court that we otherwise did not know, to me, that's interesting. But if it's just two people arguing, I don't really care what your position is in the league, what your affiliation with the league is. Like, it's just an argument show. And that to me isn't very different.
We, as we always do on Friday, kind of a lighthearted power ranking of the players turned media members in some capacity that we sort of enjoy. And actually, this is my list. I'll go ahead and say it, that I sort of enjoy it. And I'm going to be honest. First of all, Locked On NBA graphics maker, please do not turn this into a graphic. Do not put me on blast. This is my, for podcast listeners, I don't need every Twitter person online attacking me for a day. This list of, you know, guys who I sort of enjoy the most, I'll tell you my last two that were cut. I'm a big Jalen Rose fan. I know not everybody is. I just really enjoy it. Here's one of the ingredients for me that I think is necessary for you to kind of make my list. I think you have to have a healthy respect for like the legacy of the NBA, meaning you are not just, oh, we were better, we were this. Like, you have to understand that you are now nurturing the next generation of fan. You are now like, these players that are currently playing are standing on your shoulders. I think Jalen Rose is one of these guys that gets that. Like, he's not trying to talk about how bad this era is or this or that. Like, he's like, they're different. Sometimes I don't like it, but I got to give these guys props. It's their league now. It's their league. And I like that. And I think he's great. And the other guy that barely made the cut, CJ McCollum, he's a little hit or miss for me. Every now and then he like drives me nuts, but he is a guy that I feel like a lot of times I've listened to a show or I've listened to an interview and I've gone, that's great insight that I just never would have gotten. And, and he really had digested this in a way that I don't think every player is able to digest something.
Yeah. Doesn't he have a journalism degree? He's got like actual training. So that helps with CJ McCollum. And I'm with you on Jalen Rose. The whole point of this to me isn't whether or not you agree with these guys all the time. And I think 100%. That's what a lot of fans look at it that way, is like, oh, you're stupid, I hate you. That's not really the point. Like, this whole sports media thing, if you just agreed with something that everybody said, you would probably be the person that was saying it. Jalen Rose he's at least thoughtful and he's good at his job. So I'm with you on Jalen Rose.
And I honestly think he loves the league and loves the game. Like, you can tell the guys that have that. I think it's an important ingredient. All right. So my list, number five, this is a shocker even to me. If I could go back in time, like bring Adam from 1 year ago forward right now, I would be so shocked at this take. But number five for me, because of the creativity and the guy that I think most understands the use of various platforms, and as somebody that tries to get on Twitter and TikTok and YouTube and do all these different things, I get how difficult it is to like see the form and say, here's how I'm going to deliver this message on this platform. And it's Richard Jefferson. Again, you said you don't have to agree with their takes.
Yeah.
You don't have to agree with their takes. I don't always agree with his. I think he's a very interesting storyteller on multiple platforms, and you have to have a different voice on those ones. And he seems to cross seamlessly from one to the other. So yeah. I'm very impressed with him.
Too many F-bombs on the podcast, though. That's my criticism. It's just a little distracting. That's all.
He's got like, let's not lie, he's got like University of Arizona frat energy still.
With the shirt unbuttoned.
Yeah, for sure. But I like him.
Phoenix.
Number four, a guy who I think is great, but he's like a utility player almost in media, and it's Tim Legler. I think he does a great job. There goes the crowd as well. They really like that one. X's nose, he almost only gets into X's nose. I think he does a great job. He kind of has a lane that's carved out and he doesn't go outside of it. So even though he's not versatile, I think he's a great addition. And I actually think ESPN could probably expand his role a little bit. Like, people like that kind of stuff. And I think there's more platforms you can almost find for him to get those types of stories out.
Yeah. And working those crazy video boards that they do, that can't be easy. Like, you see so many guys screw up with that, and he's smooth, man. He is smooth with that stuff.
He is smooth, man. And Legler is also one of these guys that I think in 10 years, nobody's going to know that he was a player. People are just going to be like, Legler,
people right now don't realize he was a player.
That's so funny. Number three, he's fallen. he's fallen. He was like number one or two before just these last couple weeks, maybe. But Draymond Green, I still think he's fantastic. I got to give it to him. The Draymond Green Show is a must listen, in my opinion. I do think I think he is learning. Whenever you make a business plan, you know, like you're going to hear right from me, even sometimes right after a game, you're writing all this down. It's like, that's great. That's great. Well, what if that game was right after an NBA Finals loss? Well, that might be tough. Well, what if it was a Finals loss that was all your fault? Yeah, that might be really, really tough. And that's what we're getting right now. But I still think he's really, at his best, he's really great.
Well, you see so many of these guys come out with player podcasts and they'll do like a few episodes and then it'll just disappear. You got to respect the commitment from Draymond. That's that for sure. I think he can use more of like a normal co-host sometimes, like 27 straight minutes of Draymond talking. Just, you know, might be somebody, it might be nice to like bounce these things off of somebody else. That's just my only recommendation.
He also tells stories like my uncle will repeat himself like three times. Where I'm like, bro, we already got it.
Let's covered him for 2 years. They went way longer than they needed to be, these press conferences.
But when he's good, he's actually, I think, the best. When he's good, he's the best.
That's peak. Highest peak of the podcast.
Highest peak. Number two, a guy who I think is here to stay, going to be around for a while. He's a star in the making, if not a star already. That's J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick has been incredible. Number two.
Number one.
Because J.J., like, I mean, he goes between, he's doing the detail stuff, and it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, 10 out of 10. And because here's the thing people don't realize, and I don't think all players realize. Not everybody, one, knows the X's and O's the way like a J.J. Redick does. Even guys that had 15-year careers don't really understand the game. Right. And those that do, there's such a difference between understanding something and being able to communicate that to someone else.
Yes.
And I think J.J. Redick is one of those guys that takes a concept and he finds a way to deliver it so that anybody can take it. Like, it's digestible to almost anyone.
Yeah.
And that's a real trait. And by the way, he's also a great podcast host. He's also a great interviewer. He's also a great interviewee. He's a great debater. And I think he's getting sort of his sea legs in media underneath him and now going at some of the established people like a Stephen A. Not in a way that I think he's trying to like discredit Stephen A., but that he is legitimately providing a nice sort of counter perspective to him in a way that I feel like, there you go. That's actually bringing out something greater in the conversation.
It's refreshing. He's refreshing. Yeah. It's a new voice. And again, you don't have to agree with everything that he says, but he's a natural at it. He's absolutely a natural at it.
Number
I'm surprised
one.
He's number two. Like, I'm trying to figure out who's number one here.
Well, because you're thinking new media, but I'm sorry. There is still an undisputed heavyweight champion of player turned analyst talking head. And that, of course, Charles Barkley. Again, do I agree with his takes? Almost never. Almost never do I agree with his takes. But he is easily, as the tweet that went viral the other day, is he a top 10 funniest dude ever? Probably. He's one of the funniest guys. He's got a great way of talking. You could literally stick him next to anybody, and it's going to be a great conversation. We forget basketball is entertainment, and while he can be really annoying when he gets too far into the analysis lane, I think that it's like, okay, whatever. I disagree with him. People have moved on. There's greater analysts. But is there anybody more entertaining to spend 30 minutes with? I honestly don't think there is.
He's at the point, and I think he got to this point maybe 3 or 4 years ago, where something crazy in an NBA game happened, and it wasn't a TNT night with Inside the NBA. I was bummed, you know, because I wanted to hear him say something about it, right? And that is a level, that's a threshold that not many media people can cross. I know, just like me, you've been in plenty of sports bar and that show come on TV and somebody near you say, oh, I can't stand that guy. He's also maybe the most hated of these guys.
Yeah.
And every time I ever get into a conversation, all I say about people who hate, and even if you're listening to this podcast right now and you're like, I can't believe you put Barkley number one, just take a step back. Don't take it so seriously. Right. And then you'll understand what we're talking about. He's wildly entertaining. He's really, really good at his job. He's got 1,000 Emmys for a reason, man. Like, he's awesome.
That's the thing, man. It's like, don't take yourself too seriously either. Like, nobody.
He doesn't.
I was a college basketball player. You know, like, I've been through this. Like, I take basketball seriously. Like I said, I don't take his analysis seriously all the time. So every now and then he'll give a perspective where I'm like, you know, that's a unique one. I couldn't have, you know, only he could have sort of delivered this, or only a player could have. But a lot of times, look, he hasn't evolved with the league. He doesn't seem to understand why post-ups are more difficult now than they were 20 and, you know, in his era. Like, he doesn't understand these things that make his analysis very frustrating. doesn't matter. He's, if you can get over yourself and just sort of enjoy the creativity. And by the way, how many times have these other networks come up with post-game shows? Then you're just like, this sucks. That's like, they don't get it. This is a show that it feels normal to us now, but it's actually the most casual post-game show. You know, every other one is like at this desk and like it almost feels more like we're in a studio. Those guys kind of feel like you're just hanging out with them. Even though they're not on a couch, it feels like they're on a couch. And it's just, it's great television.
It feels like a podcast, doesn't it? Which is why that's why Chuck's the best podcaster.
It's so true.
That's why it's there. All right, that'll do it for us today. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA wherever you listen to podcasts, 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. You can find me over at Locked On Heat and Adam over on Locked On Nuggets. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Make sure to go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. Host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the upcoming NBA draft. They've got mock draft, player rankings, and big boards. It's free. It's available wherever you get your podcasts.